From the 1st of July, millions of South Africans began paying more for electricity after municipal tariffs increased, adding further pressure to already stretched household budgets. For many families, a challenge is no longer load shedding, but simply being able to afford electricity. The latest tariff hikes have also renewed questions about why electricity tariffs differ from one municipality to the other, why some households pay significantly more than others, and the sharp rise in fixed charges. And using less electricity no longer guarantees meaningful savings, particularly for middle-income households and small businesses already under financial pressure. For many households, desperate after years of relentless load shedding and blackouts, turn to solar as a last line of defense. But now they could be punished for the very solution that helped take pressure off the national grid. Joining me to unpack this very important issue is Warwick Chapman, an expert in renewable energy. He's also the founding director of Sensible Solar. Warwick has established a very strong reputation in the solar installation industry and is someone very equipped to talk on the subject. Warwick, welcome to Uncensored.
Thank you, Penny.
Yeah. Now, elsewhere in the world, people are rewarded for installing solar. You get the refunds, you get tax rebates, you get discounts on municipality fees. Instead, our municipalities are increasing charge the fixed monthly connection fees. And for solar users, it's almost to fund grid maintenance. So what a lot of people are asking is, solar energy still a good investment for households? Let's start from there.
Look, if you go back to why people were installing the solar in the first place, most of the motivation is to deal with the fact that we have an unstable grid. And that isn't going to be changed by the situation that you introduced. I don't agree that South African consumers are going to be punished for having solar, and we can unpack that particular characterization. But the regime is changing and formalizing and, let's say, regularizing. There are some obligations on a consumer in a context where until now you've been able to do whatever you want, basically. So solar is still a good investment because the power that you generate yourself is still going to be cheaper than the tariff that you mentioned that increases, even if there are some fixed charges involved.
Okay.
And you can't discount the continuity that it brings. When there's a power failure, we had a substation in Salt Rock blow up the other day. There was an extended power failure.
Yes.
When we have extreme weather events, which are becoming more and more frequent, and parts of the grid get knocked out, that can happen even on the best maintained grids. These systems are going to provide you with the continuity to keep running your lives and keep running your businesses. So there's still significant value in solar.
Okay. And the generation capacity charge, which everyone's confused about, and a lot of people who are possibly looking at installing solar are saying, is it going to actually benefit me? Because what Eskom is doing now is, the argument is that solar homes stay connected to the grid and use it as a backup for cloudy days or at night. And because they buy so little power, they contribute almost nothing to the cost of keeping that grid running. So it says that it's unfair for on everyone else. So it's bringing in a fixed charge that solar users pay based on their connection size. So no matter how little they draw, it grows. And this year it was proposed 20%, rising to 30. It was 20% last year, rising to 30 this year, and then another 10% the following year in 27. So is this a fair way to share the cost? Because if you're a solar user, you aren't on the grid, they're saying you're not contributing to it, and you've got a penalty on the people who are taking pressure off the grid. What is it going to be? Is that enforceable? Now you have to pay a fixed charge that seems to be escalating each year.
Okay, so the first really important thing for us is we are not Eskom.
We
are not Eskom customers here. In Belito and up to Stanger and Quadaguza, we are KDM electricity customers. So all of that that you read out relating to Eskom doesn't apply.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the principle in general. At my home, I have a nicely calibrated solar system.
Yeah.
That means that I basically treat the grid as a backup. I have the grid there so that I don't have to have a generator, but I'm otherwise running off-grid. Okay? But the important thing is I'm not off-grid because I'm connected to the grid. So I don't generate KDM electricity much revenue at all.
Okay. Yeah.
But I still require KDM to maintain my access to the grid. I need them to maintain the grid in my area. I need them to maintain my specific connection and all of the substations and stuff that our local grid connects to, but I'm not generating them any revenue.
Okay.
So that's not really fair on everyone else in the neighborhood.
Yeah, here.
And that's the reality. Remember, I run a solar business. I sell solar.
Yeah.
It would be good for me to stand in the solar users' corner and just say, this is unfair, you're penalizing us, you're taxing us, you're punishing us. But if you're looking from the perspective of someone who has to maintain a profitable electricity unit and generate the funds required to maintain a grid, but increasingly you have users on that grid who are generating you no revenue, yet still expecting the same service. In fact, it's a different service.
In what way?
They want power.
Yeah.
At all the times when there's a shortage of power.
Okay.
Solar users want power when it's cold, it's rainy, there's poor weather, or in winter they use more because their solar produces more. So it's a double whammy. They're not contributing in general, and they want power when it's inconvenient for KDM electricity. So KDM's on a time of use charge from Eskom. KDM buys electricity in the morning and the evening at a tariff that is 2 to 3 times higher than in the middle of the day. Right?
Yeah.
And that's exactly when solar users want the power. So they are taking power in the morning and the evening that KDM is buying for 2 to 3 times the price that they're selling it to the end user for. So not only are the solar users not generating revenue, they're also using power at a time that it costs KDM even more. So, you know, we need to be sensible about this.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, no pun intended.
Oh, it's gonna
because a lot of people with solar installations are successful businessmen. If we take those businessmen and put them in the shoes of KDM Electricity Department and ask them to run this as a profitable entity in an environment when more and more people are installing solar and it's having this particular impact on revenue for the department, they will come to the same conclusion. And what is it that solar users are being asked to do? They're being asked to register their systems.
Yeah.
There can be no debate about that requirement. You are adding a generator to the grid, and the grid operator needs to make sure that the generator you're adding to the grid is compatible, is safe, is compliant, isn't oversized. So you said something earlier about how these users are reducing pressure on the grid. In fact, the opposite may be true.
How so?
Because when you have too many systems feeding excess solar into the grid in the middle of the day, you can overwhelm your local transformer with electricity flowing in the wrong direction and damage that local transformer. It's something that's happening more and more and more in South Africa. So one of the reasons for requiring registration is so that the municipality knows how much solar is connected to each transformer, and they can, if necessary, ask people to stop feeding into the grid or whatever. But literally, transformers are blowing up in parts of South Africa where there is uncontrolled excessive power being fed into the grid.
And it's interesting because, you know, with Outer, you know, they are the civic organization. They have been saying that if you've got a valid certificate of compliance and you're not selling power back to the grid, you don't have to register. So in plain terms, what does a homeowner legally have to do, and how can they safely ignore it? Because Outer is saying if you do have that, if you've got a COC and you're not selling back, you don't actually have to register, because what they're saying is don't register, you know, you can get cut off. Is there merit in this argument?
I think it's important to identify that there's a difference between having a solar system and having a solar system that feeds into the grid.
Okay.
You can set up your solar system for what's called self-consumption. You consume all of your available solar power. If there's any extra, you just throttle it and throw it away. Right?
Yeah.
If you configure your system to feed into the grid, instead of throwing that excess power away, it gets fed back onto the grid. Now, the conventional wisdom would be that you're giving that power back to the municipality, and it can use it. But as I've demonstrated, in the middle of the day, where there's a glut of power that the municipality doesn't really need, it's not actually that useful to them. In the morning and the evening, when the power is incredibly expensive, that's when they need it, but that's also when solar users are, in fact, drawing from the grid. So where I disagree with OTA, and I have spoken with Wayne Duvenoff from OTA, is that the COC, the Certificate of Compliance issued by your electrician, does not pay any attention to the compliance of the inverter to the grid code in South Africa. So is this inverter certified to comply against South Africa's standard for inverters connecting to the grid? Is it safe? Is it going to put municipal workers at risk when the grid is down, but the inverter isn't compliant and is energizing the grid?
Yeah.
Is it going to inject the right quality of power onto the grid, or are you going to start having problems with your appliances at home because your neighbor's connected something dodgy to the grid that's not certified? So the certificate of compliance doesn't currently, in the latest edition of the low voltage wiring code that was released in the last 2 weeks, that COC doesn't provide for that check whether or not the inverter is grid compliant. So I don't like red tape, so I'd like to make it as simple and easy and low cost as possible. Where I think OTA are right is it shouldn't be necessary to charge a huge fee for people to register.
Yeah.
Registration should be as close to free as possible, and if there are any fees, it should be related to the process of administering paperworking that. In KDM, the municipality has been very sensible, and they don't require an engineer to sign off on applications that are residential,
okay,
that are smaller than 30 kVA. In Itiquini and in Eskom's case, they do require an engineer to sign off, and getting an engineer sign off costs a lot of money, and that's where the main expense comes from. So in KDM, they don't have that requirement, which is very reasonable, and you just need your electrician to issue a certificate of compliance, but you also need to confirm in KDM that your inverter complies with this grid code that I'm speaking about. So I do think actually that KDM has a pretty reasonable regime.
Yeah, compared to some of the other municipalities we hear about. Yes.
And when we submit an application to KDM to register a customer's system, we usually charge between 2,500 and 5,000 rand to get that. All the paperwork prepared and the sign off by the installer and that kind of thing. So it's not a massive burden at the moment. KDM doesn't do anything; they don't move the user onto a new tariff or anything like that. But the bylaw around small-scale embedded generation, as it's called, or SSEG, that bylaw will be passed in the next year, we hope, so that the situation can finally come out of the grey into the black and white. And it's also a critical component of the recovery of our electricity department. They have to get SSEGs under control.
Yeah.
I hope the early part of the conversation helps you understand why that's important. And once those bylaws are confirmed, if solar users want to feed into the grid, there will be probably a fixed charge and a meter that is required to be replaced. And if users object to that or feel like they're being punished or feel like it's a tax, they can just choose not to feed into the grid and carry on consuming their own power and using their own batteries.
Yeah, so it sounds quite positive then. It's, you know, it's not all bleak. Other than, obviously, if you're looking at the tariffs now, also the overseas imports, where that's obviously, is that not going to penalize the local companies who are importing a lot of the technology? Because I was under the impression that South Africa assembles the equipment. It doesn't really produce anything. Is that going to possibly impact a solar home or someone who's looking to install solar with the pricing?
There are hundreds and hundreds of brands of and models of solar inverters that are already certified.
Okay.
There's a long list that you can choose. And most of the installations in our area are the likes of Victron, or SunSync, or Daya, and those are all on the list. So those systems are not going to have a huge problem getting registered and regularized on the grid. There are a couple of inverters that are used that are quite popular in the cheaper range that have never been certified for grid use and cannot. Those users will have a problem.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they bought the wrong stuff in the beginning.
So that's a very important element when you're looking at how you're going to be doing your home. Just to sign off, Warwick, do you think with electricity, you know, we've had so many issues. You sit on NERSA. You represent the civic organization that sits on the NERSA board, and you guys are doing really good work on behalf of the ratepayers. Do you think there's a positive shift in our electricity grid in our town? Do you think things are, you know, on track to improving? Because we've been through some very bleak times, and a lot of people, you know, who can't look at solar because for them it doesn't seem, you know, affordable. Is there, you know, is it possible to stay on, you know, off, you know, on is the municipal KDM and still afford electricity? Because things are looking a little bit dire at the moment with pricings.
Yeah, so what you're referring to is the NERSA End User Forum.
Yes.
KDM is one of the 200 odd licensed electricity distributors in the country. And the End User Forum has been set up to make sure that the municipality can be held accountable by the customers it serves, the end users it serves, in the presence of NERSA and organized business and civil society organizations, etc. So I sit on that End User Forum as a representative of CORA. It's been doing some incredibly good work. And I really must credit the acting municipal manager and the electricity department for being extremely participative. And everyone is trying to put their heads together to find solutions to the electricity crisis.
Yeah.
We have, as you know, we've covered it many times before on this radio station and on this podcast, the dire situation KDM is in that it spends more money buying electricity at the moment than it earns. And it looks like our electricity losses will peak in the region of 27% to 30% of electricity that's bought from Eskom is lost and not sold.
It's like staggering.
But we have lots of good reasons to believe that that situation has either been arrested or has begun to turn around.
Okay.
And that we're really hopeful that come the end of this financial year that's just started, so the municipal financial year started now on the 1st of July and it'll end at the end of June next year. We're hopeful that we'll see a reduction in energy losses from 2026 to 2027.
Yeah.
And then every year thereafter, the energy losses need to continue to drop down to 6 to 12% is where it needs to be, and it's up around 30% at the moment.
I think we also have to just have a separate conversation on the billing, because I've had so many people phoning me in and with the discrepancies. So that's a conversation for another day. But I think, is there anything that you want to end off with telling our listeners on this? I mean, you've clarified a lot, because there's a lot of such much information in the media where, you know, how the penalties are going to work and what it's very doom and gloom. So it's good to be informed on what, you know, your decision is ahead. Any final say on this?
Solar is an incredibly good investment. There's very little you can put your money into today that will deliver you a lasting and continuous return for potentially decades going into the future, as well as giving you the convenience of uninterrupted power.
Yeah.
So it's a really good investment. The likelihood of that of you being penalized, legitimately penalized, is very low, because that would also amount to unfair discrimination under our constitution.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also free competition. Hey? Yeah,
there has to be a real substantive basis for the way that you treat solar users differently from other electricity users, and it has to be justifiable. A municipality or ESCOM cannot arbitrarily penalize you because they don't like the fact that you're a solar user. They can say, well, look, you want access to the grid, but you aren't paying for it through your per kilowatt hour charges, so we would like to add a small fixed charge to maintain your access to the grid. And that's justifiable, and they can explain that and defend that. And the user always has the opportunity to disconnect from the grid if they don't want that, and to run completely off-grid. And some of our customers have chosen to do that.
Yeah, which makes sense. I think I would as well.
So if you choose good quality equipment and you make sure that you follow the rules, you choose compliant equipment in terms of the grid, you get a certificate of compliance from a person who knows about solar. Not all electricians know about solar. You've got nothing to worry about.
Okay.
And DOCRA and CORA and the KDRF and the End User Forum and ILEMBE, we're all fighting in your corner to make sure that things turn around in the electricity department and that when the bylaws do come in around the registration of small-scale embedded generation systems, of solar systems, that it's fair and it's justifiable.
Yeah, we're all lucky to have you guys in our corner, and this is so important for our community as well. Warwick, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your time as well.
Thanks, Penny.
When it comes to security, don't leave it to chance. Trust the experts at IPSS Security. As the only CISA-approved security provider on the Dolphin Coast in all categories and the only local security company also accredited for CCTV off-site monitoring, with over 4 million rand invested in AI technology, they protect over 50 upmarket residential estates, spotting threats in real time. If action is needed, their rapid response and tactical teams, backed by the largest fleet in the region, is ready to act. For unmatched security, contact IPSS Security today at 0861 324 777. Your safety is their priority.